Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, October 21st, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, oversized load that some call a mega load enters Nez Perce Reservation today. Moscow City candidates discuss the April 1st City Council meeting that led to the passage of an anti-discrimination ordinance and the controversy over public input at that meeting. And Idaho lawmakers call for canceling Chang contract with the Idaho Health Exchange. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A statement from Wild Idaho Rising Tide says Nez Perce activists briefly stopped an oversized load traveling east on U.S. Highway 12 through the Nez Perce Reservation during daylight hours today. Idaho Transportation Department District Engineer Doral Hoff told a KRFP correspondent today a 64,000-pound load called a liquid full absorber was heading into Montana and then Canada. But Helen Yost of Wild Idaho Rising Tide called KRFP before today's newscast and said that information is apparently incorrect. Yost said she talked to a reporter who spoke to Regional Idaho State Patrol Captain Lonnie Richardson, who said the load was heading south on U.S. 95 towards Boise and only entered the Nez Perce Reservation on Highway 12 briefly to take the Rubens Road south to avoid a low trestle on U.S. 95. The 18.5-foot-wide load with Alberta license plates was spotted parked in a southbound pull-off on U.S. Highway 95 at the top of the Lewiston Grade yesterday afternoon. Wild Idaho Rising Tide is calling the shipment a megaload, but Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest Supervisor Rick Brazell said this summer that he had set the standard for judicial review, approved by Federal Judge B. Lynn Windmill, at 16 feet wide or more than 150 feet long. Judge Windmill has issued an injunction against megaloads on the 100 miles of wild and scenic river corridor located along U.S. Highway 12 east of Lewiston. During KRFP's interviews with Moscow City Council and mayoral candidates in September and earlier this month, I spoke with each candidate and asked them how much public input should happen in a city council setting before debating and or voting on an ordinance. The issue came up during the April 1st city council meeting when the council voted in favor of an ordinance banning discrimination against people based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Before the vote was taken, a series of parliamentary maneuvers took place, and the council did not take public input at that meeting or hear Supervisor Gary Reedner's report on the proposed ordinance before voting. Here's Moscow Mayor Nancy Cheney running for a third term, followed by her opponent Bill Lambert in interviews earlier.
You probably sensed my dismay that evening. I implored the city council to take public comment. They didn't even allow city staff to report on it at that meeting. So I was surprised to receive accolades from both sides of that, whether the people agreed with me on the particular outcome of that ordinance that was passed. But I feel very strongly that on something as important as a non-discrimination ordinance, we absolutely must engage the public so that the city council, as the policy-making body, can make the best informed decision they can, and so that citizens have a chance to weigh in. That was a highly emotional issue. It matters a lot to a lot of people on both sides of that issue, and I'm very sorry that we didn't have the public process that would have supported that.
I wasn't there, of course, but I can tell you this. There was a lot of discussion before that council meeting when with the various committees, like the administrative committee, for example. This had been brought up numerous times, and it was discussed numerous times. And that night that passed, actually, once there was a motion made on it, the mayor asked for the vote, and that stopped the discussion with it, and the folks voted on it, and it went through, and that was the end of that. So I don't have any more comment as to why they did what they did or why Mayor Cheney asked for that vote immediately. It was her decision to do that, and she did it.
That was former Moscow City Council member and candidate for mayor this year, Bill Lambert, speaking at the KRFP studios earlier this month, preceded by incumbent Mayor Nancy Cheney. During our candidate interviews, City Council member Walter Steed talked about his role at that meeting.
In the usual general sense, as much public input as possible is a great thing. That particular issue, we had heard, it had been before committees at least twice, if not more. We had gotten a large number, extremely large number of emails about it, possibly some phone calls, some letters, and every single piece of information we had received from the public up until about 4 o'clock on the day of the council meeting had been pass this ordinance. We had not heard one single negative about the proposed anti-discrimination ordinance. We did not feel there was anybody out there that was going to speak against it. And we had heard all of this, pass it, pass it, pass it. There were council members who felt, we don't need to hear it again. We've heard it. We know what you want. We're perfectly willing to pass it. We heard late on the afternoon of the council meeting a rumor that some people were going to come to the meeting to speak against it. I believe there may have been two or more persons that I couldn't identify in the audience that I thought might be there to speak against it. I had told some other council members what I had heard and thought that they might, you know, open it up for public discussion. When the mayor got shocked with the very quick motion to pass it and wouldn't recognize the motion, I was the one that pointed out that Robert's Rules of Order, which we more or less work under, not perfectly, but more or less, said that once a recognized council member is speaking and they make a motion, that motion must be heard. The opportunity to second, discuss it, and vote on it. I said after the motion and before the vote that I would be perfectly happy if we did take public input. I think Dan Carscallon said the same thing. And the mayor cut off any opportunity for public input and called for the vote. So, yes, the council made a quick motion, but it was the mayor that threw it to a vote without taking the opportunity to say, would the council allow public input? I believe had she said that, we would have done it.
Okay. Well,
the interesting thing is that the result was what, to us, 98, 99% of people wanted.
Right. I suppose there was some thought that, okay, well, there were exemptions for, you know, certain landlords and, different aspects of the rule that maybe needed to be discussed in the city council session. That was one thought I had when that was going on. You know, it was, you know, different cities may have different ordinances along that line, and usually things like that do get discussed in the city council session.
You're absolutely correct. Usually they do.
That was Moscow City Councilmember Walter Steed, who is running for re-election, speaking about the city council meeting where the ordinance banning discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in housing, workplace, and public accommodations was passed. Here's the three other city council candidates responding to the question about the meeting. We'll first hear from John Weber, followed by Art Bedke, and then Rebecca Rod.
I think that in as far as needing the ordinance at this point in Moscow, I have never heard of anybody bringing a complaint to either the city, to the police, or to any administrative or elective body saying that they've been discriminated against. And as far as tweaking the ordinance as it was written, I think you're always going to get people that don't think it goes far enough, people that think it goes too far, and eventually in this particular case, and eventually if it comes to the city council, it is up to them to make a decision. They were elected, and they reacted and they did what they were supposed to do.
Oh boy, Howdy, this is one of my big issues. The city council is there to represent all the people in Moscow, and I have determined that I kind of like my democracy sort of messy. I'd like to hear a lot of input from a lot of people. I might not agree with it all, but I think part and parcel of democracy and the way we run our city involves listening to what people say. Some of it might be bad, but some of it might be good, too. Different ideas, different thoughts. And it also serves to put people on the record about what they feel about things, so you have a name attached to various philosophies and attitudes. I think the city council should have listened to everything that people had to say that night, and any other night where there's a public hearing, it might take till midnight, it might take till after, but that's what the city council is there for. They're there to listen to what people say and give it all due consideration and not just come in and rubber stamp. Personally, I'm happy the non-discrimination ordinance went through, and I'm very gleeful about that, but I really disagreed with the process by which it occurred. I think it's incumbent upon all of us who might be in city government to sit and listen to everything that anybody shows up at a public hearing has to say. And it's the way I've run planning and zoning for the past 7 years as chairman is anybody who shows up at a public hearing, they get to have their say. And we up there as representatives get to listen to it and take everything people say into consideration.
Well, actually, I was at that meeting, and I was excited to come and hear what folks had to say, and I probably might have gotten up myself in support of the measure that passed. And I was pretty shocked to see this sort of end run on all the work that had been done, the voices that had been added, the voices that were there to speak about it. I don't know the whole behind the scenes story, but it sort of sounds like to me that there was some kind of backdoor politicking going on. Sure, it came out in my favor, but I think that sort of the end run that was done on the community folks that were there to speak, and you know, that the mayor had invited this open forum and that sort of thing, I don't think that's a good way to do business, because what it did, from my perspective, is I mean, like I said, I was really glad of the decision, but it kind of robbed that shine off of it, you know, that our city had risen to this occasion, that some other cities in Idaho had risen to, and it kind of just took the glow off it to have this sort of happen behind doors, that something had been agreed to by a few folks to just go ahead and do this and not discuss it. So I don't think that's the way to carry on city business, and I think that citizens do need to have that opportunity for input.
Do you think there might have been details of that ordinance that needed to be examined? You know, I know there's exemptions in it.
I think that the city did the best they could, you know, at this time. As a person who's kind of a stakeholder in these kind of actions happening around the state of Idaho, because we don't have our state refuses to add some of these folks to the human rights code. I think, given what our city did, it did a great job, and I guess this is just, you know, the way we're going to have to, you know, work on this issue piecemeal around cities for now. And I could always want for better, but I think we did a great job.
That was Moscow City Council candidate Rebecca Rod responding to a question about the April 1st City Council meeting, where the ordinance banning discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity was voted on and passed unanimously. Before Rod, you heard from City Council candidates Art Bedke and John Weber, And in a separate soundbite, you heard from Walter Steed. The four are running for the three open seats on the six-seat city council, and the top three vote-getters will serve four-year terms. Earlier in this story, you heard from the two candidates for mayor, Nancy Cheney and Bill Lambert. Polls will be open from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesday, November 5th at the Latah County Fairgrounds on the east side of Moscow. The fairgrounds are located across White Avenue from Safeway. Absentee ballots can be cast Monday through Friday at the Latah County Courthouse between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. until Friday, November 1st. KRFP will be broadcasting live call-in candidates forums from our studios starting tomorrow night at 6:30, when we'll have City Council candidates Art Bedke and John Weber. Candidates Walter Steed and Rebecca Rodd will be in our studios Monday, October 28th at 6:30 p.m., and candidates for Mayor Nancy Cheney and Bill Lambert will be in our studios to take your calls Wednesday, October 30th, also at 6:30 p.m. Each forum will last an hour, and candidates will have 1 minute to answer each question from listeners. The call-in phone number is 892-9200. The Moscow City Council tonight will be asked to direct the City Entryway Beautification Project Steering Committee to move forward with Phase 2 of the project. The Council will also hold a public hearing on a proposed change in city zoning code to allow accessory structures such as garages and workshops up to 1,500 square feet in residential zones with a conditional use permit. The City Council will also hear a 1912 Center quarterly report from Jenny Kostroff of Heart of the Arts Incorporated and City Parks and Recreation Director Dwight Curtis. Moscow Mayor Nancy Cheney will also present Wisescape Awards. Tonight's Moscow City Council meeting begins at 7 p.m. at City Hall. Two Idaho legislators have called for canceling an up to $375,000 contract issued by the State Health Care Insurance Exchange Board last week to former board member Frank Chan's computer company. Chan resigned the day before the contract was awarded to avoid the appearance of conflict of interest. Republican Senator Jim Rice of Caldwell, who sits on the Health Exchange Board, said when somebody is going behind everybody's back negotiating a contract for themselves at $180 an hour, and when they've got current contracts with the state at $95 an hour, I don't think that's even ethical. It's not in the interest of the citizens of Idaho, and it's a violation of the fiduciary obligation of a member of the board. The contract was awarded by Executive Director Amy Dowd, who is in charge of the Your Health Idaho, which is run by the Health Exchange Board. Republican Representative Kelly Packer of McCammon joined Rice in calling for the contract to be discarded. Packer, who is also on the Health Exchange Board, said, "Things have been out of control because we were in a hurry. It's time to have a longer thought process to get things back in line." The Insurance Exchange Board operates Your Health Idaho, which is tasked with replacing the federal software system, which, according to the Associated Press, is filled with glitches, and putting in its place a state-run system. Chan would get $180 per hour to oversee that transition. The state legislature this year exempted the Insurance Exchange from state government procurement rules, which normally require requests for competitive bids for any public contract over $25,000. Dowd said Thursday Governor C.L. Butch Otter's office was informed of the deal. Dowd said the board is operating under an interim procurement policy. She said, "This is my direction from the board to operate under this procurement policy. Unfortunately, we don't have the luxury of time. I believe Frank is the best based on our timeline. Applied Computing is best positioned to help the exchange right now." Frank Chan's company is Applied Computing. Opponents of a proposed coal export terminal at Longview, Washington, far outnumbered supporters among the 800 people who packed the fifth and final scoping hearing for the terminal Thursday in Tacoma. The hearings, which have also occurred in Vancouver, Pasco, Longview, and Spokane, were conducted by the Washington Department of Ecology and Cowlitz County for the purpose of establishing the scope of an environmental impact statement for the $643 million facility from which Millennium Bulk Terminals wants to ship coal to Asia. Opponents of the terminal want the environmental impact statement to consider the effects of the mile-long coal trains, which will bring the coal from Montana and Wyoming to Longview, as well as the global impact of burning the coal. Business organizations estimate the cleanup of the former Reynolds aluminum smelter site and the construction of the terminal will create 1,300 construction jobs. Pierce County Building and Construction Trades Council Executive Secretary Mark Martinez testified in favor of the project, saying these will be, quote, old-fashioned middle-class jobs that people can use to support families instead of sexy so-called green jobs that everybody thinks they want. Power Past Coal, a coalition of environmental groups fighting the Longview Export Terminal and two others proposed for Cherry Point, north of Bellingham, and Boardman, Oregon, say polls show a majority of Washington and Oregon residents oppose the coal terminals. State Ecology Department spokesperson Linda Kent said 50,000 written comments have been received so far. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers will be conducting a separate environmental impact study on the project. The Republican caucus chair of the Idaho Senate is mounting a challenge against incumbent Governor C.L. Butch Otter in the May 2014 primary election. Former Micron executive Russ Fulcher filed paperwork Saturday to begin raising money to explore the possibility of running for governor and said in a written statement he is confident he would be well positioned to win, especially with the help of qualified staff and the assistance of the grassroots community. The key issue of Fulcher's campaign will be Governor Otter's decision to establish a state-run health care exchange, which Fulcher believes surrenders state sovereignty to federal puppeteers and evidence the governor has, quote, lost touch with the will of the people of Idaho, unquote, after two terms in office. Neither Otter nor Fulcher have formally announced their candidacy, but both are telling supporters they intend to run. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow. Opponents of a proposal to arm certain employees in the Lake Ponderay School District have mounted a recall effort against the district trustee who floated the proposal. Other trustees complained trustee Steve Youngdahl took them by surprise by putting the proposal on the agenda without any prior discussion. Backers of the recall have 70 days to collect 105 signatures. They allege Youngdahl presented inaccurate information in his initial proposal. In a deal with Latah County prosecutors, Gilbert Auto Ford dealership entered a conditional guilty plea to one misdemeanor charge of failing to keep on-site records. In exchange, prosecutor Bill Thompson said another similar charge will be dropped. The plea may be rendered moot if Gilbert Auto appeals a decision by Magistrate Judge John Judge rejecting a motion to dismiss the case. Over half the $7.1 million which the Grocery Manufacturers Association has donated to the campaign to defeat the Washington Initiative to label genetically modified foods were funneled to the organization by Pepsi, Coke, and Nestle. The Grocery Manufacturers Association disclosed its donors list after Washington Attorney General Bob Ferguson filed a suit last week alleging the lobby group had violated the Public Disclosure Act when it created a special account called Defense of Brands Strategic Account to fight the initiative and invited members to contribute to it. The Attorney General's office issued a statement Friday saying it is dropping its action after the Grocery Manufacturers Association agreed to file paperwork with the Washington State Public Disclosure Commission to establish a political committee and follow regulations for disclosing donors and the amounts they contribute, as well as accounting for how donations are used to oppose the initiative. The Grocery Manufacturers Association acknowledges no wrongdoing. Pepsi has so far donated $1.6 million to fight the initiative. Coke and Nestle have each given just over $1 million. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. Clear skies expected into next week and all this week, with a high tomorrow of 64. 63 will be the high Wednesday and Thursday, 62 Friday, around 60 Saturday, and 55 Sunday. Lows will be 39 tonight and the next two nights, around 35 Thursday night, 34 Friday night. Currently we have 59 degrees, some haze in the area. Thanks for tuning into the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Coming up next is Eat the Airwaves, which is opinions from the West Side, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine, and that'll be followed by Climate Justice Forum, hosted by Helen Yost at 7:30 p.m. live in the studios. Music and entertainment and news all through the night here at KRFP Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to Community Radio KRFP Moscow. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 8384. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow.